You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool.
Everybody, welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. James Edwards, Eddie the Bombardier Miller, Saturday evening, April 20th, and it is Confederate History Month. How do you transition from an hour? That was one of the best hours we have had. That was just a passionate hour. The contributions of Sam Bushman and Winston Smith, and of course you, Eddie. We even had. It seems like it was a day ago, but at the very top of that hour, we had a participant of the Boston Marathon herself on. Great. Talk radio. That is what Liberty News Radio and the Political Cesspool is all about. And we've got a transition now from that topic to our Confederate History Month series. And Keith Alexander will be in just a few minutes, and then we're going to get into some other topics later in the program. But, you know, people will probably ask, though, well, if it was a false flag operation, you know, why would these two guys agree to do it? And we were talking about that during the commercial break. That's one of the few things that I wanted to get into that we didn't have the time for in the last hour. Well, it could have gone something like this. We don't know for sure, but it could have gone something like this. Let's just say an FBI agent or some other governmental agency sends a person to these guys. And he said, listen, folks, we need you to do a service for your country. We need you to take these, pretend fake bombs and see if you can plant them without being detected. And, this is a training exercise, and we need you to do this service for your country. And if these men weren't, as the media says, these extremists, if they were just normal people, well, that could have been one way that the government got them to do their bidding. And, you know, frankly, if you're not in tune with how our government works, how many people would say no to somebody who says, listen, you can do a great job for your country, son. We need you to do this. We're training people. We need to see if that you can do this without being detected. So we'll see. We don't know, but we're just saying, hypothetically speaking, that could have been a way that it went. Anyway, we will talk more about this issue by next week. More things will have unfolded, and we're going to bring Sam Bushman back, and we're going to do it all over again next Saturday on the Cesspool. But right now it's Confederate History Month, and this is our Confederate History Month hour. Winston Smith and Keith Alexander last week have had a chance to chime in already on the festivities this month, and Keith will be in later tonight, too, before this hour is over, to talk more about his take on this issue as we celebrate our cultural heritage and history. Eddie, this is your night to shine as far as Confederate History Month goes. Just talk about what you want to talk about. Your pride in being a Southerner. Take it where you want to go. We got a few minutes here before the next segment, and then I got a couple of things I want to run past you as we continue our celebration of the South. But tell people what you want them to know.
Well, I'll try to make this real brief, but before I tell you exactly how I feel, there was false flags in the Lincoln's War, too. You know, and I'm sure James knows this. The Brits and the French were ready to come in to help the South, and with their help, we undoubtedly would have won that war. But the Russians, the Russian Navy intervened, and I think James had a show on that once here one night, and stopped that. But that war was all about, as usual it is, the banker stirring up the dookie. They financed the North and the South. And in fact, the bankers were going to charge Lincoln a 30% interest for the money to run the war. That's when Lincoln started issuing the greenbacks to do away with paying that 30% interest. Well, lo and behold, we got that central bank in. It's been a fight for years and years and years. Andrew Jackson fought them and won for a while, but they got them back. We won the war of 1812 with Andrew Jackson, but the bankers won the war because they got us in so much debt, we had to go back to a central bank again. Now, the way I feel about it, if I had, could be born anywhere in the whole wide world, James, I'd be born right here in the South. I think the South, I think the Southern people transplanted from Europe. I think we're probably what Europe was 300-400 years ago. We're a holdout. The South is the Christian belt of the United States. We're the only lone holdouts against, you know, heterosexual marriage. That's the way it was in those days. We worship God. Well, at least we did. You know, the South's even going that way now. But, you know, in the South, even, you know, General Lee, he didn't have any slaves. General Grant did. It was said by Fighting Joe Hooker of the North, who was one of their fightingest generals in the North. He said that if him and his men had known that they were going to bring slavery and free the slaves in the during the war by 1863, he said they would never would have fought. They never would have fought the war. The war was not about slavery whatsoever. The war was because the South wanted to, the North wanted to keep the South under their stinking thumb and force us to work like slaves to pay for their overpriced farm implements. You know, James, we were trying, the South would like to import implements from Germany, very high-class steel plows and all kinds of machinery from Germany and from England, you know, white Anglo-Saxon nations. We didn't have a lot of manufacturing base here in the South because we're agrarian society, just like Thomas Jefferson envisioned. Thomas Jefferson's vision for the United States was a society of mostly agrarian farmers with independent home schools. You know, we didn't have public schools in those days. The children were schooled at home. And they went to school for one reason in the beginning, and that was to learn how to read the Holy Scriptures. That's the reason the first universities were formed. Harvard, Princeton, Yale, all the original universities were formed to train up ministers to read, to be able to interpret the Bible. Yeah, all the citizens in the United States knew that at one time. The fellow came over here from England. It wasn't Payne. He came over in England. He's the guy that said to try to find out why the United States was so great. And he said the United States was great because the people were good. And he said once the United States, the people in America stopped being good, the United States would fall. And James, the South, until 1865, in that time, you know, the South was still like a agrarian society, a very Christian, devout Christian society when the North was not. They were going astray. They were getting into what the new modern day church would call human secularism. And the South was behind that. And the South didn't have any of these gigantic Hebrew run banks. You know, it's just like it is today. The Hebrew banks, you know, the sons of Abraham, they controlled the money and they wanted to enslave the people. And they didn't like the South because the South was much more independent than the North. They had an independent spirit, and they resisted slavery. They didn't want to be a slave like we are now to the stinking IRS. So anyway, I'm going to pass off. I think James wants to say something, right, James?
That's right. Well, we're coming up on a break, and even though we're just getting started with our Confederate history, you can tell Eddie had to pay his taxes a couple of days ago with that little last remark. It was April 15th. But Eddie, still to this day, there is a unique Southern culture that exists only here, and that is one of the foremost prerequisites in being an independent nation is to have a culture separate and different from that of your surrounding areas. And so there's still that here in the South. We got to take a break, but we'll follow up on that more in just a second. Hello everyone, James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R-word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
A backpack is more than just a bag, it's a statement. Whether you're a student or a professional, are traveling the world or commuting to work, Teton Sports offers a wide variety of backpacks, each of which is lightweight and durable. The book bag backpacks weigh only 1.5 pounds and come in solid pink, blue, red, or black. The session bags have eye-catching designs, adding a touch of style in pink and white or in black. Each is great for kids or adults who need a versatile, resilient, and eye-catching bag. The professional and the executive are sleek, sturdy backpacks with numerous uses. Whether you're hiking in the mountains or packing for an important business trip, these bags have plenty of room. Not only are the backpacks comfortable and lightweight, but they're large enough to fill all your needs. Teton Sports also offers sleeping bags, duffels, tents, cots, camp pads, and more to ensure a quality outdoor experience. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman's Warehouse, Dick's Sporting Goods, Wholesale Sports, or visit TetonSports.com.
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
I'm loving the new production work by Art Frith. Another one that was just Dale Shannon? All right, anyway, back to Keith Alexander just walking through the studio. All the Keith Alexander fans were probably exasperated when they didn't hear his voice at the top of the first hour, but he's the closer tonight. We normally have him batting lead, but he's closing tonight. Eddie Miller, his last segment for the evening. Even Keith walked into the studio tonight raving about the first hour as he was listening to it on the radio his drive over here. Anyway, Keith, or Eddie, I should say, Eddie's still with me. I'm moving too fast. Yeah, the Southern culture, second to none. Me, you, and Keith had gone to eat at a little mom-and-pop restaurant to plan the show a couple of days ago, and you held the door for some ladies as they were exiting, and they just really couldn't believe it and just thanked you profusely, and you said, well, this is still the South. And then they noticed your belt. Eddie was wearing a Confederate flag belt. And they complimented that, and it was just, you know, it was a good moment. Well, when we do our Confederate History Month series each year, ladies and gentlemen, you can't do it justice. I mean, you're talking about an hour per show, 4 shows in the month, so that's 4 hours minus commercials. You have about 40 minutes a night to cover 4 years of Southern history. It can't happen. We don't really talk a lot about the battles or some of the biggest figures in the war, such as Robert E. Lee, for instance, because most people know about him. If you don't, you got to know. You got to learn. But we will share with you some stories that perhaps you have never heard before. And I got one right here, Eddie. Eddie, if you can quit talking to Keith for a second and get back to work here. The Southern Boadicea, as Winston called her. This was a story that Winston found and sent to me some time ago. And listen to this story, Eddie. This is something unique, a story that surely you haven't heard unless you've listened to it on the Political Cesspool. This is a letter that was written by a Union soldier. He was in the Union infantry, and he mailed it to his father describing some action that his unit had seen. Listen to what he writes. Dear Father, I take pen in hand to let you know that I am well. We are camped near Dallas, Georgia, where we found the enemy in force on the 26th. We were in line in front of the breastworks and drew a hot fire from the Rebs until about 4 o'clock when the enemy viciously charged our position. We poured hot fire into their ranks several times. Their lines broke, but they rallied again and again and came on with us, guns blazing and flags waving. They fought like demons, and we cut them down like dogs. Many dead and dying secesh fell prisoner. This is where it gets interesting. I saw three or four dead rebel women in the heap of bodies. All had been shot down during the final charge upon our position. One secesh woman charged to within several rods of our works, raving the rebel flag and screaming vulgarities at us. She was shot three times, but she still came. She was finally killed by two shots fired almost simultaneously by our boys. Another she-devil shot her way to our breastworks with two large revolvers, dealing death to all in her path. She was shot several times with no apparent effect. When we ran out of ammunition, she pulled out the largest pig sticker I ever saw. It must have been 18 inches in the blade. When the corporal tried to shoot her, she kicked him in the face, smashing it quite severely. She then stabbed three of our boys and was about to decapitate a fourth when the lieutenant finally killed her. Without a doubt, this gal inflicted more damage to our line than any other rebel. If Bobby Lee were to field a brigade of such women, I think the Union prospects would be very gloomy indeed. Your devoted son, Robert Audrey, 111th Illinois Regimental Volunteers. Andy, that sounds like your kind of women.
You got that right. I married one. You know, that's why I'm over here tonight. But she's mad at me. But listen, you know, to this day, you know, and I'm sure y'all agree with me, the South is the fight, have the fight in the spirit. And like I was telling James, what makes me sad about it, and we've talked about this before, you know, a lot of the people in the South still don't realize what's going on, because the South to this day has the highest percentage of military people that join the volunteer to go into the military, because they think they're serving their country. They think they're being patriotic, like me and James talking about, but really they're not. And I'd like to borrow a phrase from our counselor here that I've never forgot, something he said one night. One thing you'll never see in a Jewish neighborhood is an Army recruiting office. And you'll never see, even my dad back in World War II, my dad was a grunt in the Pacific. And he you know, that's where he got his education. He told me, he said, just he never saw a Jew in the line anywhere. He said, you see him back like a quartermaster back, you know, back home and stuff like that. But people don't volunteer, you know, from the North. The high, matter of fact, I think the state with the highest number of volunteers per capita is West Virginia, probably followed by Kentucky and Mississippi.
They don't call Tennessee the volunteer state.
You got that right.
Yeah, Keith commented off Mikey, they don't call Tennessee the volunteer state for nothing. But let me, we gave you a little example of a little known story about Confederate women at the time. Now, don't get me wrong, they weren't all fierce warriors like that, but when they had to be, they could rise to the occasion. Certainly the Southern women of that era really defined what femininity was all about. But get this. I want to tell you the story of D.S. Job. Now, again, you talk Stonewall Jackson, you talk Nathan Bedford Forrest, Robert E. Lee. You know those stories, or at least you should. But what about little-known stories of D.S. Job, a Confederate scout? Here's his story, Eddie. The story reads that D.S. Job, a Confederate scout, was hiding in a cornfield after eating breakfast at the home of a family in Tennessee. He had an important message hidden on his person. With Yankee patrols in the area, the Confederate was hiding during the day and traveling at night. Unfortunately, Job was spotted by a patrol of 15 men from the 115th Ohio Regiment of the Union Army of the Cumberland. Seeing that he was about to be captured, Job tore up his correspondence and began to chew and swallow it. Angered by the near miss, the Union patrol first threatened Job and then began to torture him in an effort to get the scout to divulge the content of the dispatch. The Ohio troops first hanged Job from a bridle rein and then pistol whipped him, knocking out his teeth. Bound and disarmed, helpless and bleeding, Job revealed nothing. They were dealing with a man in gray who held the welfare of the Confederacy above his own life. The torture went on. The Yanks were whooping, yelling so loudly that they could be heard at a distant farmhouse. They gouged out his eyes. Perhaps it was then that Job heaped epithets upon them. How much courage did it take to do that at that time? Then they cut out Job's tongue. The Union patrol finished off Job by dragging him to death behind his own galloping horse. Once again, Eddie, we can compare and contrast the nobility of the Confederate soldier to the savage nature of the Union Army. Job never gave up his fellow men, choosing to die a painful death rather than to betray his country. And I ask this question over and over. What happened to the nation that used to produce men like that? I mean, could you see any of today's so-called political leaders or contemporary heroes having the courage to go down the way D.S. Job did. And I'll tell you another story. When Bill Rowland was in the Sons of Confederate Veterans, he started his own camp with a couple of other guys, and his camp was the D.S. Job camp. That was the men of all the Confederates that they chose to be the standard bearer of their SCV camp. But quickly provide commentary on that, Eddie. We're coming up on a break.
You know, let's chime in on something else, James. About, I think it was last year, one of the guys here commented that the sitting governor of Tennessee participated in the Battle of Shiloh. Yeah. How many governors we have to do that nowadays? Zero. Not only will they not stand up for the South in battle, they won't even say anything good about the South for fear of being just, you know, crucified. And I think it was senator, was it from Mississippi, Thad Cochran, who's a senator from Mississippi? He got crucified for saying something good.
Well, I know who you're talking about.
Trent Lott. Yeah, he got crucified. He just said something good about the old senator from Strom Thurmond. He said he was a good gentleman and all this stuff. The South, I mean, the news crucified him, and the guy backed down and apologizes. And contrast that to the sitting governor of Tennessee in 1863.
His name was Isham Harris, sitting governor of Tennessee, going out and fighting in battle. Buried at Elmwood Cemetery, right here in Memphis, Tennessee. Well, folks, again, where do you start when you're covering this kind of history? We'll be back with more right after this.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, The Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. You're home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Eddie the Bombardier Miller is, Eddie has left the building. I see him walking down the hall towards the green room. Hey, Eddie's got to go up to Nashville. Hey, Eddie, real quick. Are you going to be back in town next Saturday? You wouldn't even be back in time to do the show, would you?
If I will.
Are you going to be here? Real quick. I know they can't hear you, so I'm having to tread water. All right. Well, we'll talk. Eddie's going up to run a marathon next week in Nashville, and thanks to his marathon connections, we had one of the Boston Marathon participants to start the show. Yeah, we can always put him on the phone. We can always put you on a phone, Ed. He's gone. He must be in the green room treating himself now. So, you know, they give us a pretty posh treatment here at WLRM. So, anyway, back to Confederate History Month. Keith Alexander is in studio now, spelling Eddie, and Keith will be with us for the remainder of the broadcast. And Keith delivered one of the most memorable hours of our Confederate History Month series that spanned back to 2004-2005 when we first started doing them in April. Keith was just on fire last week talking about the cause and effects of that war and many other things. Folks, if you missed last week's second hour, go back and revisit it in the broadcast archives. Keith didn't quite get to finish. I mentioned that he was giving us a radio-condensed version of the speech that he is delivering on the SCV circuit right now. He's been a featured speaker at several camp meetings there and all the rave. Incredible reviews he's receiving for this presentation. It's about an hour and a half off the cuff if you go see him live. We couldn't quite get all that in last week on the show, and so now he's going to continue where we left off. And, Keith, exactly where did we leave off?
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to have to chime in with a comment based on the excellent program that you guys have done on the Second Boston Massacre tonight. I think you guys just had a hellacious show, to coin a phrase, and I think that it was radio at its finest. I was listening to all of it, and I agree that it has all the markings of a false flag. Let me say something that I observed about the news coverage of it that ties right in with the Confederate History Month and the fact that, as William Faulkner said, the past isn't dead, it isn't even past. Or history isn't dead, it isn't even past. Well, this is a perfect example. I noticed in the coverage of the bombing that there was all of this emphasis and all of this good feeling towards brave little Boston throughout all of it. Boston was just wonderful, and it was obvious that the national news media was just at one with the city of Boston. And I couldn't help, as a Memphian, to contrast that with Martin Luther King's assassination in Memphis, which, of course, was merely a coincidence. He just happened to be here, causing trouble, as he often did. Violence seemed to follow him everywhere he went, including Memphis, but everywhere else he went, even in the North. But when Martin Luther King was killed, every Memphian was complicit in his murder, according to the national news media, according to Time magazine, that ran a famous hit piece on Memphis calling it a decaying river town. It's as if every citizen of Memphis had been the trigger man in his assassination. And contrast that with the treatment afforded to Boston in this latest headline grabber that we've got. That just shows you who is in charge of the national news media. It's not red state America, it's blue state America, and it is a specific part of the population of blue state America, the Jewish power and influence group. And because they are in charge, they have a special animus towards the South, which has always been something of a mystery to me, James, because, you know, next to Germans and who they equate with Nazis, the group that the Jewish media loves to hate more than any other group are Southern white Gentiles. And I've always wondered why that was. What did Southern white Gentiles do? You know, you could at least argue that based on the standard issue version of World War II that Germans tried to commit genocide against Jews. But what, for heaven's sake, did Southern whites do to the Jewish population that would earn them the number two spot on their hit parade? And the only thing I can think of is the Leo Frank lynching. Now, that happened in the 19-teens, and that was one person, okay? Leo Frank was a Jewish factory owner in a suburb of Atlanta. He was accused, tried, was afforded the best counsel, defense counsel, that money could buy at that time, and found guilty of kidnapping and raping a 14-year-old white Gentile girl that worked in his factory, and then murdering her to keep her from talking about what had happened to her. Now, Jewish power and influence nationwide and internationally swung into action in the Leo Frank case, and they were able to put so much pressure on the governor of Georgia at that time that he granted a pardon to Leo Frank. Leo Frank was going to be released from jail, scot-free, getting away with murder. Now, the people of this Atlanta suburb were so outraged by this obvious miscarriage of justice that before Leo Frank could be released, they took him out of the jail and lynched him. Okay, first of all, that's one person versus the so-called 6 million. I remember when I was a child, it was 11 million Jews that were killed in the Holocaust. And then suddenly, without any explanation, it was revised downward to 6 million. But, you know, anyone who questions any part of that version of what happened to European Jews in World War II is going to incur the wrath of Khan from the mainstream media and from all from the academicians, from the higher academic establishment, and across the board. But compare that to one person. One person, and quite frankly, I'm not even sure that most of the people that were involved in that lynch mob even knew that Leo Frank was a Jew. You know, people in red state America are remarkably innocent of any knowledge of Jewish power and influence, just like people in parts of the so-called Great White North, like Minnesota, Maine, whatnot, Vermont, don't seem to have much information whatsoever about black people. They're not black-wise. Similarly, white Southerners and white red state Americans tend to be not very Jew-wise, because Jews are, for example, in the state of Mississippi, 0.1% of the population. In Arkansas, 0.1% of the population. And in Tennessee, we have a whopping 0.3% of the population that's Jewish. So consequently, it's not like living in Hollywood or in New York City, where they're almost 10% of the population. In terms of the entire nation, in the last census, Jews made up 1.7% of the population. But because there aren't very many in the South, I really doubt that very many of the people that were involved in the lynch mob involving Leo Frank even knew that he was Jewish. They just knew that he was a murderer and a rapist of a child, and they were outraged that somehow the levers of power had been pushed and he was going to walk out scot-free, although he had been found guilty by a jury of his peers, afforded the best defense counsel that money could buy, and found guilty. So that's always been a mystery to me, how that one murder apparently is almost the equivalent of 6 million deaths, supposedly, in the Holocaust in World War II. And I imagine it's because it was an act of effective defiance to Jewish power and influence, James. That's why that happened. So, see, we're basically still the outsiders here in the South. We know this, for example, by the coverage differential between how Boston is portrayed versus in this latest enormity versus way Memphis was portrayed after, in the aftermath of Martin Luther King's assassination. We're going to get back to this and to Confederate History Month after these words from our sponsor.
Come back to the political cesspool right after these messages here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Since disaster can strike at any time, you always need to be prepared. And not just with an insurance policy. Superstorm Sandy left thousands of people starving and stranded for weeks. You need to be prepared with an emergency supply of food. Now through April 30th, save up to 25% on freeze-dried food during the Freeze-Dry Guy Mix and Match number 10 can sale. Freeze-dried food packed in heavy-duty double-enameled number 10 cans. With over 99% of the oxygen removed, it has the longest shelf life of any food available. Over 25 years. Choose from entrees, meats, vegetables, fruits, and desserts. All made in the USA. Just add hot water, wait 10 minutes, and serve. And the taste, absolutely delicious. Free shipping to 48 states. Now through April 30th, save up to 25%. Visit freezedryguy.com. freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. 866-404-3663. Act today. Don't miss out.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211, and take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again, and, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten a free people to be knowledgeable with current important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
Get on the show. Call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Do you know who that is? The one and only Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Hey, you want to know how intelligent our audience is? Just in that last segment, one of the emails that came in from a listener in Kentucky writes, Leo Frank's sentence was reduced from death to life imprisonment by Governor Stanton of Georgia. That was the cause of the lynching. The pardon came posthumously in 1986 without making a final determination of guilt or innocence. So he says, enjoying the show as always. Okay.
I stand corrected by our listening audience, which is the top listening audience of any radio show anywhere. and I'll maintain that. Now, I'm going to get back to what James thought I was going to talk about in the last segment, which is the real causes of the Civil War. I went over that just to give you a thumbnail sketch. If you listen to modern historians and the entertainment industry, you will come away with the idea that the Civil War was exclusively about slavery. The bad Southerners wanted to preserve their right to enslave poor, innocent black Americans, who, of course, were the only people ever enslaved in the history of the world. And then, on the other hand, the righteous people of the North, led by people like Abraham Lincoln, who, if you look at Steven Spielberg's latest movie, were basically just exactly carbon copies of modern liberals when it came to their views on race. Then, you know, if you buy into that, well, see me after the show because there's a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you. The biggest problem with the way the Civil War is taught and understood by modern Americans today is that people try to judge the past by the politically correct present. Our ancestors were not politically correct. They did not think like modern liberals. You know, quite frankly, nobody would be thinking like a modern liberal were it not for the strenuous efforts at psychological conditioning that have been applied relentlessly to the American public over the past 60 or more years by the cultural Marxists. That's one of their typical techniques. It's called critical theory. What is critical theory? Unrelenting criticism of prevailing traditional culture. And of course, the South, now as then, back in the 1860s, was the repository, the emblematic representative of traditionalism in America. So what Eddie was talking about, why do Southerners in the current age continue to volunteer for the military when they're obviously not being respected for it, not being rewarded for it? They're still demonized, but they certainly allow us to catch bullets. This, again, goes back to the Civil War. During the Civil War, in the immediate aftermath, which was Reconstruction, which was a very thinly veiled effort to be as acrimonious and punitive as the United States government could be towards the conquered South. And then there were two starkly different versions of what the Civil War was about. By the year 1900, everybody was trying to bind up the wounds, and Southerners in particular were interested in trying to demonstrate to the rest of the nation that they were good, patriotic Americans. That's the era, like starting with the Spanish-American War, in which the state of Tennessee acquired its official nickname, the Volunteer State, because so many Southerners, and particularly people in Tennessee, were volunteering for U.S. military service, trying to prove to the rest of the world and to the North in particular that they were good, patriotic Americans. Unfortunately, that tendency persists to this day, and again, it's totally unavailing to the South. We're considered the suspect part of America, the bad part of America, the part that Bill Ayers, the SDS weatherman who was a mentor of Barack Obama, said to an FBI informant that when the revolution succeeds, we're going to have to eliminate a quarter of the American population. And the quarter of the American population he had in mind were white Southern Gentiles, folks. That's all there is to it. It doesn't matter how much kissing of the posterior that Southerners do to try to prove themselves patriotic Americans. They're still outsiders. They're never going to be allowed to be anything else. And we've heard people like Jonathan Farley, the black math professor at Vanderbilt say that the greatest missed opportunity in American history was when the radical Republicans failed to charge every ex-Confederate soldier with treason and have them hung. They don't intend to make that mistake again. Now, just keep that in the back of your mind. You know, things have not changed. Now, if slavery was not the real cause of the Civil War, and I gave as an example what I think is an irrefutable example, the fact that there was such a thing as the Corn Amendment that was in existence and being promoted by President Lincoln at the time that secession was going on, right after his election in November of 1860. The Corn Amendment would have been the first 13th Amendment, and it basically provided that slavery would remain forever legal and inviolate in all states and territories in which it was presently lawful in the United States of America. Abraham Lincoln supported that. He sent a handwritten note to the governor of every state in the Union, and some that had succeeded, urging that that be ratified. Two states ratified it, and if the South had not seceded, it would have undoubtedly been passed into law. It would have been the 13th Amendment to the United States. So consequently, if slavery was why the South seceded, the Corn Amendment settled that. Slavery was off the table. You are going to forever be able to enslave people. So much for Abraham Lincoln as the great emancipator. But the South seceded anyway. Remember, that's what apparently provoked Lincoln, was secession, and the South seceded. They weren't banished by the Union, so the South seceded. Why did the South secede? Well, the answer to that was the Morrell Tariff. The Morrell Tariff was proposed, again, in this kind of interlude, this phony war interlude between the election results in November of 1860 and the firing on Fort Sumter in April of 1861, in which the South seceded and was hopeful that there would be no warfare or bloodshed involved, that the North would just say, go your way, and, you know, to heck with you and the horse you rode in on. That's what they were hoping would happen. They wanted a divorce, and like most people that want a divorce, they preferred to have an uncontested divorce. They weren't going to get one from Mr. Lincoln, and like I said, the Civil War is more properly known among all the different names that have been given to it. The Brothers' War, the War of Northern Aggression, the War between the States, the Civil War. The real most accurate designation for the war would be Mr. Lincoln's War, because Mr. Lincoln basically defied the opinion of most of the people in the North at the time and insisted on raising an army to force the South at point of arms to return to the Union. Most people in the North weren't willing, certainly about slavery, to sacrifice their fathers, their brothers, their sons, their cousins, their uncles in a crusade to free black people. It was never sold to the Northern public that way. In fact, most people in the North said, let them go their own way. Now, it wasn't a great majority. It was a slim majority. But, of course, anyone that defied Mr. Lincoln and his bellicose aims was persecuted. You know, John Wilkes Booth was right when he said, sic semper tyrannis, at least in this respect. Abraham Lincoln was a tyrant. Abraham Lincoln, among other things, had the entire Maryland legislature arrested and put into the holds of prison ships in the Potomac River because he didn't want them to get their oath of office and then vote for secession. In fact, one of the people that he arrested was the grandson of the author of the Star-Spangled Banner, our national anthem, Francis Scott Key. And that grandson wrote a book about it called 14 Months in an American Bastille. We'll get back to more of the real causes of the Civil War after these words from our sponsor.
And folks, don't forget that next week we'll wrap up our Confederate History Month series for 2013, and we'll have Keith Alexander back in studio to put the cap on it, the cherry on the cake at that time. But we still got one more hour forthcoming, as Keith mentioned, and we'll be getting to it right after these words from our sponsors. Stay tuned.
Another hour of the political cesspool is in the can, but don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.